Today on Talk About That, John overanalyzes a text conversation and tries to change his love language. Meanwhile, I pay people to get out of telling jokes at their event and ponder how biblical characters got their nicknames. Plus, a conversation about vulnerability, friendship, and hiring movers. Today's episode is not sponsored by Celery. When you want a huge glob of peanut butter but don't want to use a spoon, it's go time.
Talk with the morning to you is Talk About That. I don't know what that was. That British,
it's almost,
or was
Australian?
It went,
but you were,
it
saying
went Australian at the end.
Isn't Top of the Morning to you
Irish?
Jeez.
It should be noted. I don't know. That was like a total conglomeration of all like British dialects into one.
And then your fade out was like so quick too. It was like we fell off a cliff with the,
well,
the music.
Well, you understand the fade out that you're hearing is not the same fade out.
Oh, is it not?
Here. No.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's because what a nightmare.
No.
I'm glad we didn't reference it. High quality programming
oh,
we
goodness.
Always have for you here.
Multicultural, some might say.
I think it's great. I think you've, listen, I don't see culture.
Wait. Is that? I don't see, listen, we're here to do things that other people don't do or even try or attempt.
Or want to.
And one of those is horrible. Listen, speaking of horrible British accents, and she's going to love this, but if you can ever get my wife to do a British accent, it is worse than
it's
mine.
Comically bad.
It is amazing. We have so much fun.
But it's, it's offensive to everybody.
She'll only do it like when we're watching a British show, like in between, we get up to, you know, get something to drink or eat or whatever, you know. And it's just, it brings me joy.
Yeah.
On another level.
Does she, hello?
No, I don't think she could do that.
She can't even hello?
It's, I'd like to hear her try. When we went, you know, even like, and to hear her do her Spanish accent, because
right.
we went to our honeymoon in Mexico, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
I speak Spanish a little bit. So I would order.
Pequeño? Poquito?
Pequeño.
Is it pequeño?
Poquito.
Pequito's small.
Well,
what's a little? Little is pequeño.
Yeah,
I don't
pequeño.
Know.
I've gone totally. Sorry, guys. I don't remember that exact thing. It's been a while. But anyway, that she, at when we'd order food, like they would ask her if she wanted something, and she would say no. Like that was her thing. Like,
oh, yeah,
had,
yeah,
like,
yeah. It's just, hard, so hard not to assimilate into whatever they're doing.
But that was the only word she assimilated.
Oh, my gosh.
And it happens to also be the English word for no. So.
But you have to put that extra oomph on it.
Hey, I like that in the shot today you're sporting. Now, that's technically my lamp that you
that
gave
I
to
gave
me.
That I gave you.
Right.
But I took it back
now,
because it's the kind of friend I am.
And it's got the Vols on it, and I'm a little nervous.
I'm not.
Really?
No.
So usually
because,
you're like me.
No, because here's why. We are ranked number one.
In the college playoff
they
rankings.
They moved us up in college playoff uh-huh. rankings. Yet we're still 8-point underdogs to Georgia, who is ranked number three.
And in the AP poll, we're switched. We're number three. They're number
Do you know
one.
When else that happened?
Called
1998.
That's right.
Because we were number one going into the final week.
8-0.
And only the 1 and 2 got to make it to the playoff. That it was the first BCS title
right.
game. The second and third team in the rankings both lost in their championship games. UCLA lost, and I think Texas A&M lost in the Big 12, which moved Florida State, an ACC champion, up to 4, from 4 to 2. And then they were favored in the national championship game over us anyway, even though
we were undefeated.
We were undefeated, and they were just like, yeah, but it's Florida State. It's Bobby Bowden. And I'm telling you, that same level of disrespect, like, I think it suits us. I do not want to be favored.
Yeah, but don't you think that this has given Georgia fodder? Like, you're being disrespected now because they're number one and you should be number one. That's
no,
what I think. I think they're
I
the
know.
Ones. Every
It's
coach,
all going to be solved on the field. Though.
I don't think Coach Heupel, I don't think he plays the, like, emotional, we're being disrespected game from
I
what
think,
I've read.
I think none of that really matters. I mean, coaching is one thing, but as far as, like, bulletin board material, like, everything's – the whole world's a bulletin board now with social media. So
right.
it's, like, it's hard to not –
I heard Jalen Hyatt has turned off his notifications. Like, he doesn't want to know.
I know.
About stuff. And their whole culture there is very much like, hey, we're only going to be as good. And this sounds like coach speak, but I've heard enough players. They really believe it. Like, we're going to be confident as long as we prepared in a way that should make us confident. Like, it's
yeah.
our preparation that matters. That's the only thing we can control. And if we do that, we expect to win because we know what we have. So
I feel like I wish that we could integrate that attitude into the podcast.
Yeah, because I feel like you get on the podcast and immediately start just bashing it. Like, you know, we should do better. And you start telling all the people reasons not to listen. And Johnny, it's working. They're not listening.
I just meant I think we should prepare better.
I think you should have some confidence a little bit.
Oh, is that what it
we're
is?
Doing.
Okay.
And to help you with that.
Can I've deleted your notifications like Jalen Hyatt. Does that help?
Just so you know, to help with your confidence in the podcast and with the balls, I actually bought you a gift for today.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
It's right here.
Gift time?
And it's something. It's funny because you said something before the podcast. You didn't even realize it.
Right.
That is sort of a common expression for you. Okay. Johnny will say it's actually a throwback to all of our Pentecostal days.
Mm-hmm.
And so he'll be like, you can't take my joy, devil, like you say that, you know. So we were working on
it's
stuff.
It's a Kirk Franklin.
Yeah, it's a Kirk Franklin thing. And so I got you this. I saw it and thought of you. I'm throwing it so everyone knows
got
in the
it.
Room. So he's now Johnny is now unpackaging the
okay,
gift.
Hold on.
When I saw it, Johnny, I
thought. Is this a Not Today Saban t-shirt? Oh, my gosh, guys.
Not Today Saban.
Oh, it's beautiful.
And it's got the goalpost coming down and the score of the game. 52-49.
I love it.
So,
oh, my gosh.
Made me think of you, Johnny.
I'll wear it with pride.
Yeah. And it's got the little devil horns on Saban's name.
I don't know.
Maybe I went too far.
Did you make the shirt?
Johnny, I made this shirt. And I'm selling them like hotcakes. Also, I sell hotcakes. Yeah, I want to know, hotcakes must have really been a hot-selling commodity.
Maybe culture has really shifted.
Yeah, because now in keto land, you don't want something to sell like hotcakes.
Now it would be like eggs.
You think people eat? Right, yeah.
These things are selling like eggs.
For me, it'd be like selling like hot wings. If you said that.
Oh, because you keep hot in it still.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was on the so I'm on the plane. This weekend, I had a bunch of flights, so.
This is not your plane. This is a commercial flight.
Right. Okay. I don't have a plane.
Guys. Oh, I gotcha.
And I just noticed that the things they say, things we say to each other on a plane and things the pilot will say to us are very like, you could have worded that differently and made us all feel a little bit better. One is when the pilot says, we'll be on the ground soon. I need you to be more specific.
That's true.
Like, that's really true no matter what. We're going to be on the ground soon.
One way or another.
Yeah. I don't like that.
Yeah.
Say, add the word safely.
Yeah. Or like on the wheels.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our wheels are going to touch down soon.
Yeah. Don't just get on the mic and be like, we'll wake up with the Lord. That's not right. And then I noticed people talking to each other on the plane and like the guy wasn't flirting with a girl, but he was kind of like making small talk. And he said, where's home?
Oh yeah. That could be.
Right. And so I was like, you could have just said, like, where are you from?
Right. What city do you live in?
Yeah.
Where's home's like.
Where's home is one thing, but like, what's your address? Like.
Right. It's,
specifically, right. Where's home?
Yeah.
Could you show me on this map?
Right. Could you mark it? Drop a pin.
Yeah.
Right. Interesting.
I don't know.
You know, I have found that my comedian friends, you just did something most of them won't do. True comedians won't make a lot of airplane jokes because it has been so.
Yeah. It's beat
observational airplane humor.
Yeah. Well, that's what happens when you become a road comic is if you're not careful and you're not like living your life and doing real life things and you end up with a lot of, cause your only experience is hotel rooms. So you got a lot of jokes about like the tiny soaps and then rental cars and airplanes and airports. So you end up with like 20 minutes of that. Because it's your world.
Which most people who are listening, that's not their world.
I think it's one of the reasons I bought a scooter, because I was like, I need to like get in some hijinks with this dumb scooter so that I'll have material. And really the only joke I wrote about the scooter was that I would put it on the screen behind me. I'd be like, yeah, you guys ride? And they'd be like, yeah. And then I go, I got one. And I put a picture up of me on my scooter and they would all laugh. And I go, I don't care because now that's a write-off because it's in the show.
Nice.
That was the way that I... But I never really...
Expensive joke.
I think I had a chip on my shoulder about having the scooter. So I could never get out of
my...
I could never view it objectively enough to write jokes because I was always like, it's just as good as... Right.
Right.
I'm just as good as any of you. And I'm clearly not.
When the way that you're writing it looks like a schoolboy with his books in his lap.
Yeah.
The way
when you get into it like you're getting into a desk.
Right.
Yeah. It's a step-through design.
You were driving a two-wheeled desk and calling it a motorcycle.
Yeah.
But you were like, but the engine's got just as much power.
And it did.
But who cares?
Right.
You still... Listen, I...
From the front, it looked like a motorcycle. And then people would see me in it as I passed, and they were like, oh. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't cycle shame people.
I appreciate that.
So, I mean, it's fine. But...
That means a lot.
You did look a little ridiculous.
Whoa.
I actually loved the scooter. I actually wouldn't mind.
I don't. You know what's funny? I don't miss it at all. I thought... I would, but I just got it out of my system. Like, I feel like I quit while I was ahead at Vegas or something, you know, like you're like, all right,
yeah,
we didn't get rear-ended and get launched into the stratosphere.
Yeah.
I almost crashed it a couple of times where you just have these near misses. You'd have a little waggle and somebody would pass you on your blind spot or whatever. And it was enough where I was like, this would be, and we'd wear shorts and stuff on it like idiots. Like, we'd be out on a hot summer day, and I'd just be like...
If you think jeans are going to stop the road rash, buddy.
Well, no, but it's just... It's one of those things where, yeah, you... If you lay that down, you hope you die. You don't want to live through what injuries you're going to have on a...
Yeah.
And plus, you can't tell people you crashed your scooter.
Mm.
That's not even...
So, my daughter and I are watching the original Fresh Prince of Bel-Air
mm-hmm.
on HBO Max.
That's a heck of a segue.
Well, there is. So, last night's episode,
yeah.
Uncle Phil... buys a motorcycle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all his friends come over. They're all in, like, black leather, you know, jackets and stuff. I don't think they're wearing chaps.
No.
I would have gone too far. And so, and Viv's making fun of him, like, you know, this is your midlife crisis.
Right.
You know, we're just men. He's like, you're...
Will Smith says, like, how many cows had to die to make that jacket?
Something
do that.
Like that. Gosh, yeah. the number of...
Poor
jokes
Phil.
About Uncle Phil's weight were unbelievable. And then it was like the whole show was built around... jokes about his weight and jokes about Carlton's height, mm-hmm. who really isn't that short.
Right.
Like, when he stands next to him, it's like, it was almost so predictable. But you laugh every time, Johnny. What are you going to do?
It's a good show.
And so she begs him, like, they just had the baby.
Yeah.
You know, so, hey, you're now a father again to an infant. Like, we can't, you know. So he comes in the next day, and he's like, look, I just want you to know the bike is gone because... there's nothing in my life. You're right. There's nothing in my life that's worth. And he goes in this whole thing. And like the crowd, like he kisses and embraces her and the whole crowd even applauds, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jeffrey, the butler, walks up and is like, I'm not going to do the British accent here. He's like, your insurance company called and there, everything from the crash is going to be covered. All the damage to the ice cream cart is going to be covered,
right.
except the sleeve of whatever that he ate from the ice cream cart after the crash. You know?
Oh, right.
And she looks at him, you know. He's like, well, what would you have said if I told you the truth? So he crashed the bike and then acted like he got rid of it, you know. So,
but, yeah, I didn't have that, but yeah, there was some near misses. Because the thing is, like, you can goose it. Like, I'd be trying to get off of it. And one time I, like, was getting off of it and, like, trying to just creep it up and, like, park it. And you just twist and
it
just
off.
Took off a little bit. And it, I had to like, whoa, hey, easy, big fella. It was kind of...
it seemed like a TikTok about to happen
mm-hmm.
at your expense. But as long as you own the video,
yeah,
bro, you just let the...
Thank God I wasn't on TikTok then.
Pour in.
I had a TikTok video go like get like 40,000 views today. Wow. So, bro.
You ever wonder if like...
I don't know what's going to... I'm just saying like this may be my last podcast. I may not need
He's now
this
a TikTok
anymore.
Star. He's TikTok famous.
I don't want to. I'm just putting it out there.
I wonder if the clock is ticking on TikTok for the amount of time it's going to be the most relevant social media platform. And if that's the case, someone's going to write an article like, TikTok, your time's almost out. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's coming. Johnny, I'm writing that article right now.
Go ahead, and just in case.
I actually read this morning that they were talking, kind of talking about Elon Musk. And as a guy who writes, is a great blog from a friend of mine that I follow, and he's kind of specializes in social media and building platforms and stuff. And he said that it's coming to the place where social media needs us more than we need it.
Yeah,
it's becoming evident a little bit.
Well, that was the argument for years ago already. That like, if you notice, because that people go, how do they even make money on Facebook? Like, how does it make money? And it's like, oh, we're the product.
Right.
Like, if there's no product they're selling, you're probably the product. And then we found out all this stuff about the data breaches and the data mining. But we're all too addicted to it now to get off of it. So we're just like, and some people have gotten off Facebook, but I just mean like a lot of us are still like, yeah, but that's how I keep in touch with Aunt Marjorie.
And I got to tell you guys, If you, I don't.
Hey, by the way, hey, Aunt Marjorie.
Hey, Aunt Marjorie. I don't go to Twitter hardly at all unless you send me a link. Mm-hmm. You'll say, hey, read this. I'll go look. And then I'll find myself starting to doom scroll.
Yeah.
And then I'll just like, nope, I don't do this. Like Twitter.
So I gave you a little hit. Is that what you're saying to me?
Right.
I started the.
I look up and I'm in a ditch somewhere on a scooter.
I apologize.
But I also don't go to Facebook hardly ever. Like hardly ever. I'll check notifications. And I'm sorry about that. I am that guy. I'm not trying.
You think that makes you better than us?
No, I think that. I mean, yeah.
Right.
I'm just kidding. I think I know what's good for me, or I think I know my limitations. I think many of you maybe listening have a greater capacity to just be bombarded with negative information over and over again. I slip through the cracks of emotional fortitude too quickly. So
yeah.
I find that I don't know. My wife's really good because again, she's a two, which means she's a helper and she's very intuitive. She's in what's called the feeling triad. So like she walks into a room and she really does feel everybody's like weight before they've ever said anything. Like it's very crazy how she can be like,
yeah,
hey, something's going on with Johnny, whatever. Like before I would ever like, who?
She's like, I noticed your weight.
Wow.
When I walked in, I felt it. I'd be like, okay, I'm working on it, but
geez,
thank you.
Bold. But she will like, for real, feel what's going on with people before, you know, they're like, how did you even know that? And she'll go, hey, are you okay? What's going on? How did you even know something's wrong? Like, they've been trying to hide it. So, like, she gets on Facebook and really, like, catches up with people there by seeing what's happening in their life. And mm-hmm. she doesn't mean to, but she memorizes everything she sees then on
yeah.
social media of other people. So, like, and then starts connecting dots like a detective in her head. Her and Sadie both have this. It's like, hey, she'll be like, hey, you remember, you know, name someone? I'll be like, no. And she knows them as like the second cousin twice removed of someone on the volleyball team's dad who went to, like, she has all this, it's like if you had all the strings
yeah.
on one of those detective shows, she's just pulling it across this mental board.
Right.
And I'm just like, I don't.
And then she accuses that volleyball dad of murder. Which is
that's the twist.
Not a great ending.
And then that's just the beginning of the show. And then we have some.
Right. You can't reveal. That can't be the real guy because it's too early in the show. It's
right.
like Law and Order. When they arrest a guy and it's like five minutes into the show, you're like, he's not the killer.
Yeah.
There's so much more time left.
Occasionally, I don't watch Law and Order, but occasionally I'll watch shows like that where they will arrest someone really early.
Yeah.
And then now they're playing off your bias of watching so many shows that you don't believe it can be that person.
Right.
And that person gets seemingly exonerated early in the show.
Yeah.
And then now at the end of the show, new evidence comes in. It's mm-hmm. almost like...
it's a red herring of a red herring.
Right. Like The Usual Suspects.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like you come to believe it's impossible.
Yeah.
In the end, he puts down his cane, walks straight, and walks away, and you know...
He Kaiser Soze ate us all.
Yeah. It's like, wow, he got you. If you haven't seen that movie, it's really on you at this point. Was it?
Yeah, 30, that's 35
years old or something?
Well, you don't watch it now because Kevin Spacey's been canceled or whatever, so you can't watch Kevin Spacey movies now without being like, oh, he was a creep this whole time.
Sometimes I go, it's a little bit how I feel about Tom Cruise. Like, I don't want to hang out with Tom Cruise.
Right.
But I can enjoy his acting.
Just want to enjoy Mission Impossible.
Right. Well, I can say, well, that was, here's the thing for me. Maybe this is biased towards the writers, but I'm like, hey, this dude played the part that someone wrote for him to play, and he played it well, but it's not like unless he wrote it too.
Yeah.
I want to go, hey, I can enjoy. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like going to your comedy shows. Like, I don't like hanging out with you in person, but yes. I wrote all these jokes for you, and I enjoy hearing you tell them.
Right.
So, yeah.
I worked with Kevin Nealon last night at Zany's, and second time I've worked with him, he's so funny. He did this joke last night. He said, you know, they say the most stressful job in the world is air traffic controller. And I guess that's true, but not if you don't take it seriously.
That's good.
That's so funny.
I'm a little starstruck when you say, because you told me yesterday you were performing with him. Like,
yeah.
That's a little 90s SNL
He was on the show 10 years and has all these iconic scenes, and he was kind of one of those glue guys on SNL where he mm-hmm. could be in anything and make it a little bit better. Like him and Phil Hartman and some of those guys were so funny.
He plays sort of the like I'm thinking about Happy Gilmore.
Right.
He can play a semi-normal person
right.
that's a little clueless mm-hmm. really, really well.
Yeah.
Almost like an expert that's a little clueless in their expertise.
Yeah, he's got these little asides that he does in his stand-up that are unlike anybody else. He's so low-key,
yeah.
and he kind of draws you in, and he'll be like, I'm at the store the other day. He's starting a conversation with people who's just met in a room. A whole audience is looking at him, and they know him as Kevin Nealon. He's just like, I'm at the store the other day, and the cashier just starts doing this thing, and I get so angry. You know how I get. And he did it like 4 or 5 times, and it got a laugh every time. It's just so funny for yeah. like a celebrity to say, you know how I get.
Right.
It's just so disarming and like charming.
Yeah.
And that's his whole
act. Charming.
It's just charming. But that's his whole act is based on that ethos that he builds.
Yeah.
And his jokes are really funny too, but he's just a funny guy.
I think there's something to be said for the fact that the audience knows you so well that you can,
yeah.
you can play off of the familiarity
yeah.
in a, like some of my friends who know me really well, I don't have to make the same disclaimers to them that mm-hmm. I do to strangers.
Yeah. You know?
Like, who was I talking with that we were talking about that? That you get honest enough with people that, oh, you know, it's someone who's a 9, who's a person who's kind of sees all sides. Mm-hmm. Usually their voice kind of gets lost a little bit in the conversation. It's sort of the hallmark of a 9 is their voice is not always heard. They feel like their voice is not heard. And they were talking like, hey, but in my marriage, we know each other so well.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have to sit back and worry about that. I could just blurt out
yeah.
loudly if I want.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to be worried about whatever it is that I'm holding
yeah,
in other
good.
Situations, you know.
I think that's probably true in my marriage, for sure. I mean, not that I think you told me that I'm a 6 or whatever, but like, or that you see me that way. But there's definitely that thing I think about a lot of times when I'll be having a conversation with Curry and I'll be like, there was never any fear of like, what if she sees this side of me? Like all the sides have yeah. long since been exposed, you know?
And yeah.
so it's like, you just, there's a real rest that comes from that, a peace that comes from that.
Yeah, when you can be yourself, usually I think that means
yeah.
you can show the insecurities or the negative parts. I had an experience, and you know about it, but I'm not going to be specific about it, but this week, and it caused me to have to really think through some recovery things in my life again.
Yeah.
Someone asked me yesterday, like, can you grow enough where your Enneagram type or those kinds of things, you know, shift and change? I do believe love languages, if you remember that.
Yeah.
The 5 love languages, I think, is a very revolutionary concept that really does work well. I've used it a lot in premarital counseling and in my own marriage early on, especially. But I think over the years, your languages can change because, like, I wasn't a quality time person per se, or certainly an acts of service person. I'm a very serve yeah. you kind of person, but I don't think of it as, oh, if I serve you, then you're going to think of that as love. But my wife is an acts of service person. And so early on, I mean, cleaning the house was not, if she cleans the house, I don't think, oh, wow, she just showed me how much she loved me. That didn't
right.
mean that to me. It does to her. And when I figured that out, like, oh, this is a way she receives love, I became someone to clean the house a lot. But now, fast forward 22 years,
yeah,
I think I kind of interpret it as that now. When she does that, I receive the language as the way she speaks it. And then she also, I'm a words affirmation person, certainly. I mean, she was texting me today, just randomly in the middle of her very busy work day on a bunch of calls, just beautiful words about how much she loves me and, you know, appreciates me and our best friend.
And she was like, oh, God, wrong text.
Sorry,
wrong person.
This is
my bad.
Yeah. But, you know, so our languages shift. But I don't think your Enneagram shifts because I said, look, here's the deal. No matter how much work I do, I still have to, I can still get spun out by the things that always spin me out. You never
yeah.
stop applying those tools to those places.
Right.
And for me,
the negatives kind of stay the same. Even if you can add positives, but your negative recipe or whatever is going to probably stay close to the
exactly.
same.
Exactly.
Like
yeah. you have issues that can be life controlling. The goal is that they're not. That.
Do you think you've become more of a quality time person because you have Sadie now? And like, if she gets into that teenager mode where she's like, you're not cool anymore, like, do you think you're going to be like the parents that try to trick their kids to coming home for Thanksgiving when she gets to be an adult child? Like, that's what happens to a lot of parents
yeah.
are like, they weren't necessarily quality time people, but then you get to that point where you're like, you're empty nesters, and then you're like, turns out we really need quality time
yeah.
or we don't think our kids love us.
I think a lot of my lack of what I perceived as not being quality time was the pace of my young life and the achieve the desire to achieve, to stay in motion, which I still struggle with.
It's a waste of time to stop and have fun with this person.
Right.
Because I could be making things.
I could be accomplishing something.
Like, here we are wasting time at this dumb whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
Which
hurt me deeply that you act that way.
I'm sure it probably did at times.
No, it didn't hurt me, but I just think that I didn't think of you as that kind of friend that would be like, let's go to the movies together.
No.
Let's
go. We did that young days.
Even when we go to lunch together, it's kind of like we're lunching, then we're going to podcast together, and it's part of your work day. Like it's a, we're building something.
Yeah. You know, for me, a lot of
Let's talk about your issues, John.
Yeah, the podcast for me has been a great chance to hang out with my best friend.
No, and it's been great.
That's probably the reason it puts it on our calendar. Because that's not because it doesn't matter to me. It's that I know I still, it's less. I still carry a pace or a deadline pace often, not as much this year in my writing. But between pastoring and writing, I still carry a pace that I want to put the things that matter to me on my calendar. Otherwise, I feel like they fall through the cracks, and I don't want you to be one of those. So, because you're important to me, Johnny. You're very, very important to me. And, but no, I mean, yes, you are. But
I'm carrying a weight. I hope you can tell.
Oh, yeah. I feel it. It's heavy. Please get this weight off of me.
You're hurting me.
I can't. I had a thing this week where I had someone. It's part of my recipe is a great word. I sent a text that was very gentle, very whatever, and I kind of got blasted and then ghosted by someone I don't know that well.
The old ghost blast. It's the worst.
Oh, my gosh. And not today, Saban.
Who are you going to call? Ghost blasters.
That's great. And,
That is the worst, though, when you get like a text back that's kind of like cryptically rude, and then you respond with like something, you didn't mean that, did you? And then they ghost you, and you're like, well, now I'll never get closure with this person. Well, there's a rift now.
Yeah. And I read it to you. Again, I went to the few people. I read it to you, to my wife, and to Andrew.
Yeah.
So that lets you know what it did to me.
As soon as you read the first person's response to your text, I was like, there's no way John let this go. I knew that there would be another interchange where you go, hey, man, just circling back. You didn't think that I meant X by that, did you? Because what I meant was, and it's 8 pages, and I'm like, now this person's exhausted, and they're like, blah, blah, blah. And then they came back with a little bit even ruder.
No.
Or they ghosted you from that?
No, so I sent a thing.
Yeah.
They sent back what appeared to be I had offended them. I respond, dude, I cited recovery and everything.
Oh, right.
I remember
this part.
The 12-step process for me is very much like when I think maybe I've offended. And I'd already apologized once the first time. Yeah. And I got it back a no problem.
Oh, boy.
No, like, no, you didn't offend me. Nothing like that. I was like, ooh, that sounds like a problem.
Not good.
You said no problem, but that feels like a problem. And so then, because I do care about the guy. I'm not trying to.
Right.
So then, yes. And I debated it. I was like, okay. So this is, again, now bringing therapy, Enneagram, recovery, all of it. I'm like, okay. I try to ask this question. It took me a minute to get there, but I really try not to require of people what only God can give to me.
Okay.
That's a real big thing for me. And that's a, like, that's it's cost some money on therapy to get to that place to go, what am I really wanting from this person?
Right.
Take it all the way through. Is it I'm wanting to be liked? Is it I'm wanting to be, say, as a writer, this is the thing. Am I wanting to be close to somebody influential, helping with their story or whatever? Is it that, does that lead to security because it helps pay the bills? Does that lead to more opportunity? Usually for me, it's less about money and more about more opportunity to write.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, that whole book award world for me is less about, I mean, book awards are book awards, it's fine, but they're a chance to say, if this doesn't do well in the market, I'm still a good writer.
Yeah.
Like I have to come to that grips. Like I'm trying to prove, not I'm trying to prove something, but, and I think it's okay to some extent to go, hey, the sales are not really my business when I'm a collaborator. Like they're not.
Yeah.
Like sales are sales.
Same burden.
Right. That's someone else. So can someone also just evaluate this writing and let me know. But for this, and that's what I told this guy, I was like, can you change your type or change who you are? I was like, no, I mean, I still got spun out by the same issue. I just had different tools to address it. And sometimes I still, again, go, and I did. I went down for a little bit, but I come to people. First thing I want to know is clarity. because I lack it.
Like, am I overreacting here or whatever?
Right. Yeah. Does this seem, first question, does it seem to you when you read this text that this guy may have been upset with me?
Text is tough too because it can come off very curt anyway.
Right. Some people just communicate that way in a text. They don't have, they're busy, they're whatever.
And your assumptions about a person, if you already have like a weird bias towards them and then they send you a text, you're reading it in this with this bias lens.
Yeah.
In their, well, knowing this about this person, they mean this by this. And they might not have, but you're...
And you don't know someone as well.
Yeah.
And that's part of the problem. And then, it always causes me to go, because to me, a mistake or an offense shuts down a relationship or an opportunity, a potential relationship.
Mm-hmm.
That I don't mean just for something that I gain. I don't want to have enemies.
I don't want enemies either, or even weirdness. I think I was talking to a comedian friend about how like comedians get like judged for a living. Every 6 seconds we get a grade on stage for how we're doing.
Yeah.
And so it can build this mindset of like people pleasing is not even the word. It's off the charts, people pleasing.
Yeah.
And so if you're not careful, you can build a personality that's very people-pleasing. And then what that opens you up to is being easily manipulated. Because if somebody's not pleased with you, they know that you'll do anything to please them.
Right.
And so, and then when you do it to a hard line, you go, no, I can't do that. They go, well, I thought you were whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you can be like, no, I didn't mean to be that way. And you're just like chasing things.
And you got to ask yourself, what are you chasing?
Right.
You know what I like about when I know I have a friend like you, a real friend in this world, is that, again, the pretense is gone. If you're upset with me, you'll just call me and say, hey, bro, what the heck?
Right, right.
I don't think if you got a friend you haven't had an argument with, you don't have a real friend or you haven't had a disagreement.
Yeah.
But if you have the freedom, that always makes you feel good. Like, I like it when a friend has the freedom to feel like they can say that. Because the idea is, for both of us, I think, up to now, like, yeah, we're going to do whatever's necessary to make sure this works.
Yeah.
Like, this is valuable. If it goes through difficulty, we're going to try to fix that, And you've been very patient with me because I think it's true.
John, it's fine.
You're like, yes, I have.
I mean, I really have, but.
Because I don't think I'm a very easy guy to always be friends with. I think that I'm an easy guy to be acquaintances with.
Yeah.
But, like, if you really were depending on me, I feel like a lot of people in ministry depend on me, but friendship.
Let me just say. John picked me up from the airport yesterday.
Bro. And there's so many other things I could have been doing.
Yeah.
But I did. I was like, you know what? It really, that's the funny thing. I speak acts of service a little more than I did.
Yeah.
I go, this is a chance to show Johnny that I care.
You're like, he's really going to owe me after this.
No, because you're always, although I think we've gotten old enough now, we can forget about all the things you fix at the house or whatever.
No, it's fine.
I
was going to Uber and I was like, oh, but I've got all these bags, so I'll have to get the Uber whatever.
It's expensive. Uber.
The Uber XL or whatever it worked. Because I had two huge bags of merch. And so I was like, John. John can get me. Curry was at work. Mm. And I was like, I was going to Uber. You go, don't Uber. Come on.
Come on, man. You were like, fine.
And so you saved the day, bro.
Amen.
Picking somebody up at the airport is that's a big thing.
Right now it is. The National Airport under construction.
And you just don't have, like, that's when you know who your real friend, like, I don't even think do people ask their friends to help them move anymore? Like, is that a big thing?
Listen, if you're one of my friends and you want me to help you move,
yeah.
God's honest truth, I will make a $200 donation
yes.
towards a moving
company.
I think
it's about age, though, because we're at the age now where you're like, what good can I really do? I'm going to lift your dresser. Uh-huh. I'm going to be in traction the rest of the day.
Uh-huh.
You're going to pay me in
beer. It's a good chance I'm going to break something.
You're going to pay me in beer and pizza. Like, just let me help you hire a mover.
Yeah. Because it makes your life better.
Yeah.
I can, the mover makes not just my life better.
Yeah.
But you can be less stressed, too. It's a gift.
Well, it's like I've had friends who, years ago when I was, like, starting doing comedy, they wanted me to come do jokes at their wedding because we were close and I was their college pastor. And I did it for a few people, and I enjoyed doing it, but it was stressful.
Uh-huh.
It's almost like singing at somebody's wedding. Like, you can ruin their whole day.
I hate singing at a wedding.
So it's not like bombing at a bar somewhere. It's like I bombed on video for a video you're going to watch every year.
Right.
And that's the memory they have of your wedding. So it's a lot of pressure. And I think like the third or fourth person in my life that asked me, hey, would you come do a toast or come do a thing? I go, listen, if you will just not make me do this, I love you so much. If you will not make me do this, I will give you the wedding gift. And I did. There was one, I gave two different couples $1,000.
Wow.
Just because they let me not do jokes at their wedding.
That's a good trade.
But the ones who I did it at, they're good memories and I'm glad I did it.
Yeah.
But it was also like, I'm running out of, like, we're going to mess this. Eventually, I'm going to get this wrong.
Like the other day, I asked you to come speak at the church.
Yes. And I said, I'll give you $1,000.
You didn't give me anything. Is what I'm trying to say. Like, what I got to do to get on? See, only real friends get nothing.
Yeah.
Speaking of, by the way, I think here in front of millions of people, you know, and I know why, because I know you.
Oh, boy.
But the church staff really wants you because, you know, you go and speak at other churches.
Well, it's not that common that I do like a Sunday service. Like maybe twice a year, three times a year.
You tell me all the time.
Yeah.
I'm doing the Sunday service. I got it. I'm doing a bit first, and then I'm making the turn and going into this, and then I'm going to talk about it. You'll share your message. And it's always so good. And we're the kind of place, you know.
But then I got to come back here if it goes bad. I got to come back and be here.
Yeah.
And just be like, there comes that guy. As I walk in.
Well, I'm just saying there's a, as the teaching pastor and the guy who coordinates, you know.
You're going to find a slot for me on the calendar?
Well, Johnny, if you let me know, because here's
can
the thing,
I do Christmas Eve service?
We're already
at, let me be funny if I just demand, like, Easter. I'll do it, but only if it's Easter.
Easter or nothing.
I've done Palm Sunday twice at churches, honestly. I think Palm Sunday is a church service that churches use sometimes to, like, they know Easter's going to be a whatever, and they want to do one last big push, so it's like bring a friend Sunday.
Yeah.
So they'll bring me in to kind of be like...
When you're the teaching pastor and not the lead pastor, Palm Sunday is your Easter.
Yeah, it's true.
That's
you
always,
never get to do Easter.
That's always my big, like, this is when I... So, dude, I bring it on Palm Sunday, bro. Like, the other weeks, I just kind of phone it in with a Palm Sunday.
Yeah. Sorry.
I really enjoy the Palm Sunday message, actually. It's so fascinating.
For me, the Super Bowl is our Super Bowl. It's the actual... Remember one time when I did it, I used to do announcements and stuff at our church, I would do like upcoming sermon series and I wrote a bunch, and I remember one was like David and Goliath, a real David and Goliath story. And I think I was the only one that thought it was funny.
Laughed.
I remember thinking like the crowd did not.
They didn't get it.
Because like that's every, it's such a cliche. Right. You know what a real David and Goliath story is. That David and Goliath, those guys.
Right. Instead, it's like Tom Brady versus, you know, I mean, yeah, a real David and Goliath.
There was one about, there was one that I wrote, I can't remember, it was something about Zacchaeus and short men. It was about a whole thing. Which somebody was talking about that, like, you're this guy in the Bible, you're this huge business leader, you follow Jesus, you give back four times the money you took from people as a tax collector, you have this huge testimony, and then the Bible refers to time immemorial as a wee little man. Like, that's what you're known as forever. It's just like,
yeah,
the Bible's got some, yeah, you know.
It's got some teeth to it.
Yeah, there's just a thing. Like, you're known for that, you know.
Yeah.
You're the woman at the well. We don't even, look, that's who you are.
That's.
You're the woman caught in adultery.
Yeah.
Like, we just, these writers of the of the text were just like, that's who she is. Like,
or even church history, you're James the Lesser.
Oh, right,
bro.
Yeah. Or a Simon the Zealot.
Yeah.
He got excited at one meeting.
But you know what, Johnny? he got excited at one meeting.
Have you tried this coffee? Okay, easy, buddy. Easy.
Hey, Luke, Simon the Zealot. I wonder if, like, when Luke is the scribe,
right?
Like, if someone's like feeding him, like, hey, let's call that guy the beloved. Called that guy the zealot. Yeah, that's such a funny idea right there. Yeah.
And there's Tommy the mole over there. Well, he's give him a break.
And Judas doesn't
he's
get
really self-conscious about it. No, he's the mole.
The mole. That's funny. And Judas doesn't get a title except the son of perdition later. But you
on,
it does.
He probably deserved that.
But they're taking that from the Old Testament. You know, like they made one up.
Yeah.
I wonder what our titles would be in New Testament theology.
Well, you'd be John the Lesser just because you're smaller than me. We're both Johns.
That's
it's like Big John and Little John.
Yeah. John and John the Lesser. I had a joke I wrote in that comedy class about that. Like, dude.
You wrote a Bible joke?
Well, it was like.
It's what people would expect of you. You're like, you take a comedy class and all your jokes are like, hey
everybody.
Bible jokes.
Transubstantiation. Am I right?
Anybody?
No, it's like, I think it really matters what parents name their kids. You know, like, you got to think this through. Like, okay, right. Hey, Ivan the Great, that's awesome. You know what I'm saying? Like, sure, you know he was going to be awesome, you know, but like, dude, James the Lesser, he didn't have a chance, you know? Yeah. It was better than that.
Ivan the Terrible.
Yeah, Ivan the Terrible. I had another one, another name, and I can't recall what it was, but I don't know, Johnny.
There's no way to know.
Here's the deal. I didn't really launch a comedy career. It wasn't for the purpose of launching a comedy career.
Do you think that the class helped you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It helped me understand.
Because I don't. Here's why.
No. I got five reasons. They're here on this pad. No, the whole reason was I was doing a conference that you had gotten for me.
Oh, that's right.
And they weren't bringing in a comedian that year. So they asked me if I could punch up a little bit because they knew that I hung out with you, which means nothing. Like, it doesn't mean I'm funny at all. I just, you know, again, just wrote for you. I mean, gave you all the funny material, but I can't deliver it. Johnny,
you're like my Cyrano. So I'm standing in the shrubs with a big nose, just being like, hearken, or whatever. Hear ye, is this thing, whatever. Good to be hither. There used to be a Zach Galifianakis character that he would do in clubs where he would be like,
good to be hither.
And he would be an 18th century comedian. He would come out with a powdered wig and like a scroll of jokes.
Uh-huh.
And he'd be like, good to be hither, good to be hither. And then he would hold the mic and he'd go like, is this thing on? Then he would look at it and go, what is this thing?
Yeah, that was one of your favorite jokes of all
so
time.
Great.
Yeah.
Good to be hither.
I think I was writing the Avid Endorsement book too, and I wanted a little, I just wanted to get in the headspace. And Johnny, I think that the awards speak for themselves.
On the award, it's engraved.
Right, it says it. Yeah. So, but no, I got to hang out. Rick Roberts is amazing, and I learned.
Oh yeah, he's the best.
I learned. I like the science of things. You know, picking them apart a little bit.
Well, and every speaker can learn from like concepts of humor, just as far as setting your audience at ease, or like learning how to know when they're leaning in, and picking up on that those context clues instead of just being like plowing ahead with your message and not ever like. The audience's response is it's a conversation.
Yeah.
So even though you're giving a monologue and sometimes in a sermon, that's why a lot of those old sermons like almost annoy me because it's like they're using old tricks when they go, turn to your neighbor and say blah, blah, blah. Well, that's a trick to get groupthink going and get your audience engaged.
Yeah.
That's fine. I'm just saying instead of having interesting content, you just stop every 5 minutes and say, repeat after me and get them to.
Some of that's educational.
Yeah.
It's just to keep people.
Yeah,
I don't know.
There's science to it for sure.
I used to tell like teachers, young teachers and stuff like you got it with kids. You got to do a commercial.
Yeah,
they're used to television. They're gonna have a commercial every 7 or 8 minutes in a show. You got to do a commercial, which means you shift something
and
away.
It's even shifted further now because what's it? YouTube videos. It's every 2 minutes or something. So we're looking for a.
Yep. I don't do that. See, and I think
we don't do the crazy turn to your neighbor stuff though here.
No.
When did we stop that? Did we ever do it here?
I would have people repeat stuff.
Yeah. But that was your youth sermon. You'd be like, say jalapeno or whatever.
Right. Right. Say a thing and have them, you know.
And then make a sound.
Jalapeno, hot, hot, hot. There was a guy.
Right. That's right. Jalapeno, hot, hot, hot.
And, you know, and again, for kids, it just is like, oh, I'm back. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a
keeps
really.
Them from, now you're just fighting their phones.
Dude, I told someone the other day, like, I remember that. The first time we just graduated our huge class from 7th grade through 12th. And a couple years later, I remember when, and people had phones, but like texting wasn't even a huge thing yet.
I thought you mean like in their home, like phones had been invented. there was a phone.
Some of them went to the post office, to the telegraph. And I remember like the first time kids were staring at their phones instead of listening.
Yeah.
And it was very jarring, like. And I didn't have a huge room of people that I had trained for 6 years to, because we kind of did we by that point, if you're blessed to have that kind of momentum, which I don't think it's necessarily leadership skills that get you there. I just think sometimes all the people show up at the right time. But if you're blessed to have that, you can really lean into positive peer pressure. Like in our youth group, in at one point, it would be the uncool thing to not listen and pay attention.
Right. What are you doing here if you're not going to pay attention?
Right. It'd be the uncool thing to make fun of our special needs kids.
Yeah.
Like in our, we had a special needs small group and we would let usually one of them sing.
Yeah.
You know, and you'd have 120 kids stand up and a kid up there who, you know, is singing a Barney song.
Yeah.
And they'd sing along and clap for him.
Right.
And you could tell the new kids would come in who are the first timers that night. And if they were at school, this is a straight up make fun.
Right.
Straight up laugh and giggle. And they're looking around going, what planet? And that was just a testament to our kids and our leaders.
And your culture.
Like,
yeah.
We're going to honor this kid. You know, this is not a moment to make fun. Not that the kids don't have that kind of stuff in them. It's just, you know, you'd be made fun of for making fun of. Like, that'd be the thing we don't do. When it shifted, you know, now you're a different group. I was like, oh man, I don't know if I could build that again with a phone culture. You know what I'm saying? Like, how are you going to get people? How are you going to say, hey, without just being that youth group that does, and some do, and there's a ton in place, like, everyone stick your phones in this basket, you know? But that's also, then you're getting a little, for me, you're getting a little punitive, a little.
You'd be a TikTok pastor, a YouTube pastor. Hey guys, before we get started, before you open your apps, smash that subscribe button. Hit that notification bell.
Hey guys, we're about to go live right now. You know who else went live? Anyway, and you know what, listener? Even though this isn't live, we hope that you smash that subscribe button.
We do. We hope you leave a review, because that helps the almighty algorithm help other people find us.
Johnny calls it that. I just want you to know, I don't worship it like he does. I worship God. And Johnny, I have a book for you about demolishing your idols.
I appreciate that.
Hey, and speaking of books, by the way.
Oh, that's right.
There's one in my background.
Oh, I'm looking. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that just released this week, called Born for Rescue by Pat Bradley. And I got to write on
this
book.
How can they get that book, John?
They can go to Amazon and get it.
Oh, well, that's, everybody's got that.
Born for Rescue, Pat Bradley. Guys, I'm not kidding. And I've been, two books have released this last month that have been amazing. One was More Than Your Number by Beth and Jeff McCord. If you're like an Enneagram doubter, skeptic, it's a great book for you. Or if you're more like an Enneagram enthusiast, you kind of like know your type, maybe your wings, but you're wondering what's next. And you hear us kind of reference even on here some like IFS or some other type of therapies. This is a great way. That's a great book. So More Than Your Number, you can go check out morethanyournumberbook.com. I think. Don't quote me on that. Just go to Amazon.
Just go to Amazon.
And this one, man, Pat Bradley, I will say this. It's telling stories. And his organization is called Crisis Aid. They're the first on the ground, like, for the tsunami in Asia. Yeah. Like, the unbelievable stories of both pain and redemption. But I'm telling you, some of the craziest stuff I've ever written. And you go, there's no way this is true. And then he shows you a picture.
Yeah.
Like, where he's sitting with the Taliban, having a dinner with the Taliban.
Wow.
Like, that's in there, and the pictures and just crazy stuff. So check out more. Go check out that book as well. Born for Rescue, Pat Bradley. Amazing organization to support. I support them. Amazing guy. It's called Crisis Aid. So you can also check out Johnny's comedy, man.
Do that. Go go to johnnyw.com or go to our link trees. They're linked in the show notes and everything too, usually.
Link trees in our show notes. That's all of our stuff. Websites.
Yeah. Some cool things coming for the show. So make sure you share these episodes and like and subscribe and all that good stuff. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it really does.
Oh, talkaboutthatpodcast.com has all of our archived episodes as well.
And that's also our link trees. You can find it there.
Link trees and Patreon and all the, guys, we know you know all this stuff.
It's so much. But it's good, though. It's multiple places.
It is. It's good. You got to be able to find things you like.
Yeah. You know, send us things you'd like to hear us talk about. You can email me at john@johndriver.com, or you can email Johnny if you want to talk to him. johnny@johnnyw.com.
That's right.
We have the same model, the same template of our email addresses. Mm-hmm. Coincidence?
We're not hiding out. We're out there for people to find us.
It still feels pretentious every time I say John at johndriver.com. It's very like...
When I check into a hotel and they ask for my email, they look at me like, who are
you
that
you
have a domain?
Right. I'm like, johndriver.com, #johndriver.
/ huge celebrity. Beautiful.
Guys, you are huge celebrities to us, and that's why we look forward to doing this again next week with you on
Talk About That.
Hey there, it's Carly Mercoulier, host of Therapy and Theology, a weekly podcast that explores popular topics and questions related to faith, feelings, and spiritual formation. Subscribe at lifeaudio.com.